My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, and we're very pleased and joined by our colleague, Kamran Bokhari, Director of Analytical Development at the New Lines Institute for Strategy and Policy. We're all together off to Kazakhstan via the Wall Street Journal. The headline, Kazakhstan blames violent protests on criminals. Rioting and looting, says the subhead, erupted amid demonstrations over fuel prices. Government and picketers alike see criminals involved. The first graphs. This is James Marson and Thomas Grove for the Journal. For 3 days, protests in Kazakhstan triggered by fuel price rises remained largely peaceful. Demonstrators in cities across the country sang the national anthem, remonstrated with officials, and chanted, "Old man out," referring to the longtime potentate, Nursultan Nazarbayev. Then, as night fell on January 5th, new groups took over the streets of Almaty, the largest city, not the capital. Young men wielding guns, sledgehammers, and makeshift weapons. They stormed official buildings, attacked police, torched cars. They breached the airport and ransacked it. They raided banks and looted shops. Kamran, a very good evening to you. This report is extremely fresh about criminal elements. I note that Moscow, Vladimir Putin, has talked of terrorists. So has Tokayev, President Tokayev in Nursultan, the capital. So, I believe, is a concern in Beijing. Beijing has offered assistance. Russia's assistance showed up right away. What do we believe is the driver for this? Is it the fuel prices? Is it the disorder in the streets? Are there larger forces at play here? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. I think the situation is complicated in a combination of all the factors that you mentioned. Clearly, there was a large outpour of people in response to the hike in the fuel price. And it wasn't just the fuel price that they were angry about. That was just a trigger. There's been pent-up frustration about socioeconomic conditions in the country for a long time. Demonstrations go back to 2011, though nothing of this scale that we've seen, but they've been happening from time to time. I had a piece for Geopolitical Futures back in 2016, where I actually predicted, back then there were some disturbances in certain cities, low-level disturbances, nothing of the scale that we saw after New Year's. But I predicted that Kazakhstan is ripe for, if you will, public uprising and destabilization, and which could spread throughout Central Asia. And now, 5 years later, we're seeing it. Back to your question about, who are behind these disturbances or this uprising? Well, it's a variety of elements. So clearly, as you mentioned in your report, 3 days went by without any violence. And all of a sudden, we see the entry of unidentified elements, and we're not really clear who they are. The official line and those of its allies or seemingly who want to be allies, such as the Chinese, are saying, hey, it was criminals, terrorists, outside forces. The Chinese have used the word colored revolution. But the president himself has also, through his words and his actions, hinted at internal elements. The dismissal of the intelligence chief was clearly, and him being charged for treason, clearly indicated that this is an intra-elite feud. At least some elements of the elite turned against this president using the opportunity presented to them by the unrest. And so how did they accomplish that? We have very little knowledge of that, but it's clear that, people were mobilized, and you don't mobilize like that in a violent manner in a synchronous fashion across such a large geography. This is, by area, the ninth largest country of the world. There are three time zones in this country. So there had to be some mobilization. Now, who was behind that mobilization? Well, the hint is that certain elements within, you know, the ruling circles or factions may have been behind it. But beyond that, we don't know. And if I recall correctly, I did see some report in which President Tokayev actually used the word coup. And so the military was not involved in the coup. Coups are usually done by militaries. We didn't see any evidence of that. The most that we saw was on a local level, in solidarity with the protesters, some elements of law enforcement agency personnel joining the protest, but that was it. So this is a unique form of a coup in which non-state actors are used by elite elements from within the system to essentially try to grab power. That's all we know right now.
Gordon?
Cameron, there are approximately 3,000 or so Russian peacekeepers in Kazakhstan right now as part of a CSTO, Collective Security Treaty Organization, force. Obviously, Russia has great interest in Kazakhstan. There are Russian ethnics there, and of course, a number of Russia's space facilities are in Kazakhstan. Is there a danger that this was maybe engineered by Putin? Or is he going to take advantage of this in some way? And could we see Russia try to annex either effectively or legally a part of Kazakhstan?
So those are all, you know, important questions. One thing that I know of Kazakhstan is that the Russian capability is nowhere near as it is in Ukraine. So the Russian intelligence services, through their contacts in Ukraine, can, you know, get people to demonstrate, and they've shown that, and even pick up arms against the pro-Western government. But they've not been able to essentially mobilize forces in Kiev or much less the western part of the country. Here in Kazakhstan, I don't think that the Russian government or its security services have that kind of capability. I really think that this was an opportunity that presented to themselves. It was both a threat and an opportunity for the Kremlin. Threat because this comes at a time when there are 100,000 Russian troops are mobilized along the border with Ukraine, and there's a standoff between the White House and the Kremlin, and talks are happening. And all of a sudden you see the rear flank of the Russians falling into chaos. So I don't think that they wanted that to happen, but when it did happen, it, you know how it is, you know, it's not just black and white. It's not just an opportunity or a threat. It could be both. So they turned this threat into an opportunity to demonstrate and signal to the West that, hey, we can fight on two fronts. So we can deal with you, you know, in Ukraine, and we have the capability to send in forces at the same time if there was danger in another area. So I think that that's basically what has happened here.
Kamran, geography. Almaty, the largest city, is, I think, 100 miles or 100 kilometers from the Chinese border. The Kazakhs are not inconsistent with all of the Turkic peoples across Central Asia. You know all of this very well. The Uyghurs are a major crisis for the world and for China. Is that a concern in Beijing, that what starts out as gang behavior could easily move into being a base of organization for pushback on the Uyghurs?
Yes, absolutely. I think that what has happened here is of a, you know, significant, extremely significant geopolitically, and it isn't just, it happened in Kazakhstan, but we're really looking at the dynamics of the entire Eurasian landmass and not just Central Asia. So up until this moment where the Russians sent in a CSTO task force, a majority of whom were Russian troops, the perception was of a Russia whose footprint is receding from Central Asia, especially as it's trying to deal with its strategic front yard, which is facing Europe. And At the same time, we're seeing large amounts of Chinese cash come in to build the BRI and other commercial interests. So it was, and I wrote about this, in 2019 and last year, that Russia's footprint seems to be receding, and the vacuum that's being created, that's being filled by China. And I wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal earlier this year criticizing the Biden administration for throwing a blind eye to Central Asia in its national security strategic guidance document, where it's all about China, but there's not one word, the word Central Asia isn't even mentioned in that document. So you had that situation. Now come the CST task force. So what that has demonstrated once again is the Chinese can come in with a lot of cash, but they can't, they don't have the capability to enforce security in this region, which is why that statement from Beijing comes after the fact that CSTO went in. That's when the Chinese actually came in and said, hey, can we offer help? Because they're not in a position to offer that kind of help. Russia's still a large military power in the region. It may not be throwing around the kind of cash that the Chinese are, but there is still, Russia's still a military power, has strategic interests. And they're not just doing it in Kazakhstan. This is happening while Afghanistan, on the southern end of this region, is in turmoil and is affecting Uzbekistan and Tajikistan and Turkmenistan. And again, we see Russian forces, Russia behind the security effort, whereas the Chinese trying to take advantage of that. And this is no different from what the Chinese have been doing for the past 20 years. They built the BRI network in Pakistan and Kazakhstan, try to push it into Iran and broaden it in Central Asia at the expense of the U.S. dime, because it was U.S. underwriting security in Afghanistan, making sure whatever happened in that country did not spill over into the adjacent regions. So that's typical Chinese MO.
Kamran Bokhari, Director of Analytical Development, New Lines Institute for Strategy and Policy, Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.